call this meeting of the Emmitsburg Council to order, and this evening I would ask, we have in our midst, we have Elder Darwin Wismer from the Community of Christ Church. He is going to open up with a word of prayer, and after that, we are fortunate this evening, we also have with us the Barbershop Quartet, the Doran McTaggart, Mary Maddox, they like to be called, or the Barbershop Harmony of the Barbershop Harmony Society, and it's Bill Strong, Fred Sorrell, everybody see Fred out there, Doug Scott, and of course Doran McTaggart. I'd ask you that after the prayer by Elder Darwin Wismer that you remain standing for the singing of our national anthem, O Canada. If you would please stand. Elder Wismer.
Our gracious and loving God, we thank you for the privilege we have to live in the beautiful town of Emmitsburg, and we thank you for the freedom of democracy which allows us to determine our future and make decisions that provide for the benefit of all. We thank you for those who have chosen to allow their names to be elected as councilors in the town, and we pray that as they deliberate on the business of this day, that you will grant them the wisdom of your spirit to make decisions that will arrive at consensus for the benefit and good of all. We ask you to bless them, bless all those assembled here tonight. We ask you to bless all those who work for the town of Emmitsburg in any way that we might be able to experience the benefit of working together and providing a wonderful place to live, a place of freedom, and a place of peace, which we all enjoy. Thank you, Lord. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Amen. Council have anyone any pecuniary interest they wish to declare at this time relative to tonight's meeting? Hearing none, we'll have that entered into the minutes. And of course, during this course of events, if one finds themselves in conflict, notification to the chair identifying what the conflict is, then we certainly will have it entered into the minutes. That brings us to the minutes of our previous meetings. What's council's pleasure relative to those particular minutes? The minutes on March the 18th, the regular council agenda, and of course the in-camera. Councilor DePasquale.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that the minutes be adopted by council and those confidential minutes of the closed sessions of council remain confidential and restricted for public disclosure in accordance with exemptions provided in the Municipal Freedom of Information and Protection of the Privacy Act, and received both meetings of March 18th.
And moved. Is there a supporter? Councilor Sutton supports that. Are there any errors, omissions, or corrections? Any comments or concerns? Hearing none, all in favor of adopting those minutes, Opposed, minutes have been adopted unanimously.
That brings us to delegations. Dora McTaggart, Mary Maddox, Barbershop Harmony Society.
Gentlemen, if you would.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Mayor.
You're welcome.
The Windsor chapter of the Barbershop Harmony Society requests the Amherstburg Council for their support and consideration to have the week of Sunday, April the 7th through Saturday, April 13th proclaimed Barbershop Harmony Week in Amherstburg. To show our appreciation of your support, our quartet was pleased to open your meeting with a four-part a cappella barbershop arrangement of O Canada. The Barbershop Harmony Society is celebrating its diamond anniversary, recognizing 75 years of barbershop harmony across North America. The Windsor chapter is hosting a one-time event commemorating the achievement on Saturday, April 13th at the Tecumseh Mall at 1 o'clock. It's free, so we invite you and your friends to be there. Not only to celebrate this milestone of our society, but also paying tribute in the best way we know, by singing. This event, called Harmony Explosion, is an invitational music extravaganza featuring the Sun Parlor Chorus, several chapter quartets, and two high school choirs. Our Windsor chapter was chartered in 1944 and was the first chapter outside of the United States, thereby making the society international. You will be interested to know that the Windsor chapter also sponsored a barbershop chapter right here in Amherstburg in the late 40s, early 50s. And for a number of years, the Amherstburg chapter was a hive of activity, singing a cappella music in the barbershop style. Today, the society has affiliates in Great Britain, Ireland, Sweden, Norway, Finland, Denmark, Germany, Spain, Australia, New Zealand, and South Africa. We could say we're worldwide, aren't we? The Barbershop Harmony Society is the largest male singing organization in the world. Our 75th anniversary international convention will be held in Toronto this July, and about 8,000 people will be there taking in the activities. On behalf of the Windsor chapter of the Barbershop Harmony Society, we appreciate your time and consideration of our proposed proclamation helping to preserve the musical art form and sharing our spirited celebration of our society's 75th anniversary. Thank you so much for letting us speak here tonight.
Thank you very much for that presentation and certainly for the singing of our national anthem. Questions are relative to the request. Councillor Pilon.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. The gentleman said did such a fine job, I have no choice but to receive the delegation and further that council proclaim April 7th to the 13th as Barbershop Harmony Week.
And supporter for that motion, Councillor Puget supports that motion. Further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor? Opposed, it's carried. And so then the proclamation reads as such, whereas the Society for the Preservation and Encouragement of Barbershop Quartet Singing in America, known as the Barbershop Harmony Society, was officially organized April the 11th, 1938 in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And whereas what began as a small group has steadily blossomed into the world's largest all-male singing organization, an international organization of men from all stations of life, and whereas the Barbershop Harmony Society is dedicated to the spread of harmony for the enjoyment of all people of all the world through organizing and encouraging close harmony singing groups, and whereas the Barbershop Harmony Society encourages harmony amongst all people of the world through the universal language of music, and whereas the Barbershop Harmony Society has actively preserved and presented a distinct style of vocal music that originated in North America, and whereas the Barbershop Harmony Society is dedicated to sustaining and preserving an international tradition, the Barbershop Quartet, and whereas the Barbershop Harmony Society promotes musical education through music scholarships and other means and supports charitable foundations, and whereas barbershoppers are engaged in laudable civic service and enrichment of our cultural life through the fostering of traditional values in entertainment and community endeavors. Now therefore, I, Wayne Hurst, Mayor of the Town of Amherstburg, do hereby proclaim the week of April the 7th to the 13th, 2013, as Barbershop Harmony Week.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Good Don't day. Forget a free concert Saturday. Thank you.
Council's indulgence in bringing item 7.4 forward at this time, the Junior City Hockey Report.
I would entertain a motion, Councillor Sutton.
So moved.
Supported by Deputy Mayor Sutherland. Any discussions? All in favor? Motion is carried unanimously.
Item 7.4, Junior City Hockey Tenant, United Communities Complex.
Mr. Mayor and Council, thank you for taking some time here. This is, I think, the third time I've been in front of you with similar scenarios, so you've heard this before. You'll recall the Junior A tenant that we attempted to bring into Amherstburg, and you'll understand and remember how that resolved. In January, though, we were made aware of the OHA facing the decision of choosing an expansion opportunity for a Junior C club into Amherstburg, or the movement of the Junior C team from Kingsville to Amherstburg. In late March, we were informed that, in fact, the OHA had made a decision to allow the movement of the Kingsville team to Amherstburg for the 2013 hockey season. You have the report in front of you, so I won't go through every single one of the details, but in general, we all recognize that the complex is an outstanding facility for minor hockey. There has been a request for some upgrades based on the new team coming in and bringing value to the building, value to the community. And you've seen the needs as they're assessed in the report. A large dressing room is required for the use of the 23 young men that will be part of the team, enabling six showers as opposed to three, for example. There's a request for a gondola to be erected for a presentation of games, again, to heighten the fan experience and to create the atmosphere that we're looking to have at these games. And then there's some other amenities, including a laundry facility, which I think I mentioned in the report that we could actually take advantage of, seeing as how we don't have a washer and dryer and are currently sending staff to LaSalle to get laundry done. Those are the general concepts anyway. The details are in the report. I'm going to actually pass things over to the principals to introduce themselves and speak to their cause as well, if you'll indulge them.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. My name is Gaspar Spada. My business partner, Joe Donato, and our general manager and head coach, Greg Primack. Thank you for having us tonight. Our philosophy since purchasing the Comets has been to put together an entertaining product on the ice and afford the opportunity for local players to play at a higher level. We feel that Amherstburg has a greater potential for us to fulfill those goals as we can rebrand ourselves and take on a fresh start. In speaking with many residents, the response has been very positive and we feel that the community support will be great. We understand that the residents have wanted a team for a long time and we believe this will translate into a large fan base. We plan on being very active in the community by providing players for reading days at local grade schools, year-round hockey camps, including camps on PA days, developing a spring hockey program, for example, 3-on-3 or 4-on-4s, coaching clinics for minor hockey coaches to develop players in the minor system to their best potential. Our plan for the team name is to have a contest for the community to participate in selecting the name. The winner will receive two season tickets for the upcoming year. The focus of the name will be towards the heritage and the history of the town. Now, when having a junior team in any town, the involvement from the community is very important. Sponsors, volunteers, minor hockey associations are of utmost importance for the team to survive. We understand that this is a very big responsibility on our part, and we'll need all the support we can get to make this team as professional as can be. We proudly represent the town of Amherstburg. We look forward to the challenge and to our relationship with the community. Thank you.
Thank you for that presentation. Are there any questions of council? Councillor Davey, followed by Councillor Pruget.
Hi.
A couple of questions, and one of them is probably to Dean. We talked about the press box being built on the main rink, and you talked about it being in the, I think it was the southwest corner. Do press boxes normally don't have to be kind of centered, or do they have a good left eye?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, they don't have to be. There are lots of examples of community arenas where, you know, the control box and the press box is kind of the nickname for it, is in the corner of the rink rather than over center ice. In an ideal world, it's over center ice, but I think what we're talking about here is
King's Bolt's in the same corner.
Yeah, we're talking about the appropriate location, I believe.
Okay. And I wasn't quite sure when I first read the report. I thought the laundry was at who will cover the cost of the utilization of the washers and dryers? Will that be absorbed in the?
We've got our own laundry machines there that we've offered to bring them over at no charge and set them up there for the time being, and then as long as they last, I guess then we'll have to cross that bridge afterwards, right?
Okay. And the PA days, and I assume those PA days would be when there was the ice cover on that second sheet, or would that be utilizing the you were saying about having ice time for PA days, which would be great for kids.
Mm-hmm.
But that would that be on the main ice, or I know that after May, that one ice pad is usually decommissioned.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, we haven't discussed the specifics of the PD day or PA day camps, but we typically for almost all, if not all, of the PA day camps, I'm trying to think of like in May and June, we wouldn't have a second pad. It would be, you know, subject to the availability of ice around programming. But for most of them, we have both pads, and for most of them, at least one of those two pads would be available. Well, for sure.
Nothing wrong with a good left eye.
I know that. I knew you'd appreciate that.
Councillor Pilon. Excuse me, Councillor Puget.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst. Through you to Dean. Dean, before any agreement is reached, will this come back to Council for a final approval?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, definitely. All of our agreements will always be seen by Council before signing.
Okay. And part of my question was answered that Councillor Davies asked, but regarding the washers and dryers, who will be responsible for the hydro?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, we will be.
Okay. And if an agreement isn't reached, like, will this have any impact on, because, how do I phrase it? Did the OHA have any, did anybody give them any indication that a tentative deal had been reached with Amherstburg? And I don't know, Dean, if you can answer that.
I'll definitely answer that. Through you, Mr. Mayor. No, you know, the OHA didn't have any part of this, any reference with us in terms of the decision they made. So that we didn't tell them there was any deal met with anybody prior to them making their decision. Their decision was made completely in isolation from us.
And may I continue?
Go ahead.
Okay, and then regarding this agreement, how soon would it have to be in place before they could, start the season?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, we learned of the decision of the OHA on March 21st. We had two very quick but very, very full meetings over details. But I know that their ambition is to, they are actually booked to be on the ice in April, late April.
April. Yeah.
Late April. So we'll be working with a lot of speed to get a deal in place. Their ice rental that they purchased in April is not pertinent to the deal. It's the purchase that in good faith that we'll be able to get to the deal and make this their home, but we'll be working quickly because there are a lot of pieces and parts, and the name of the team, for example, needs to be established, and we need to get construction work underway in order to meet the September deadline for finality.
I have a couple of other questions, but I'll let the other councilor
talk.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you, gentlemen, just comment maybe if you could on local talent and your plans for utilizing local players on the club.
When we looked at Amherstburg, one of the intriguing things was the minor hockey system that's here. It seems to produce a lot of good players and good teams that come out of this area. So yeah, we definitely want local talent on our team. That's very important for fan support too.
And currently we have four Amherstburg players.
steal some of those good guys from Essex.
That's it.
Also through you to Dean. Dean, can you talk a little bit? I know we discussed this before, but it'd probably be good just to refresh our memory in terms of the ice time and our current ice allocation policy. What's the plan in place for dealing with that and the other user groups? Because I know the report indicates that AMHA is supportive. I'm just wondering where the other groups are at.
Yeah, similar to when we went to Junior A through the Junior A process, we wanted to make sure we weren't negatively impacting our incumbent users. So they were informed, at least our major stakeholders were the people who take most of the ice and who would receive any impact if there was to be any. So they're aware of the fact that the Junior C team is committing to Sunday nights as their game night. We have availability on Saturday. The scheduling, I don't believe, is completed. But we have availability on Saturday if they needed an alternate date to offset, where they're competing for a home night. But what was really important was to work with AMHA, and we had a lengthy meeting with AMHA where all the parameters were discussed, and everybody can go forward knowing that that there is no impact on incumbent users, and that it's in the best interest of everybody to work together towards positive future.
Okay. And finally, as I read the business case, it appears, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the user rates charged to the club will pay for the improvements over a two-year time frame, and that obviously we'll have safeguards in place to protect those investments from the town's point of view.
Yeah, through you, Mr. Mayor, definitely that's the plan, is to have a return on investment of about a year and a half, and there are ancillary incomes that will also help us with that, but the contract that we'll sign with the team will actually cover off those investments that we make in that building.
Thank you.
I think just before I go to the next speaker, Councilor Pion, it's important to understand what Dean has said to the previous speaker, because Dean, of course, acts as a facilitator, and we must be very clear about the fact that Amherstburg in itself, Dean, Northern Municipality, has no part in the selection of who the owners of the Junior C team coming into the municipality. It's strictly done by the OHA. Councilor Pilon.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I'm sitting here listening to Councilor Sutton's questions. Gives me hope that he thinks about the people a lot, because those were the questions I basically had. One of my concerns was youth out of our own town, and also one with Dean was user groups. I know there was some of them, I'm sure there was some give and take a little bit with them, but I think in general, are they satisfied?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the indication they gave to us, and I made sure it was a point I actually literally said, so we're good, before we left the meeting, and they declared they were. The accommodations they're mostly making have to do with the location of the Junior C dressing room relative to the typical home end of the ice. Usually the home end is at the southmost end, or it has been since the building opened. We're looking at moving the home end to the northern end of the rink, and that's really because we need to have two dressing rooms available at either end for teams coming on and teams going on. And when the Junior C take the other two rooms in that hallway, that will eliminate that opportunity. So if we didn't have another set of rooms in the southern hallway, we don't. Anyway, it's a little complicated, and I can diagram it for anybody who's interested. But we went through it at length, and that was where AMHA had to really kind of wrap their head around it. But they were definitely with us on the same page.
Councilor DePasquale, followed by Councilor Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you to Dean. Just a question on the financial model here, Dean. Roughly about $44,000 over 2 years. That's not a definite estimate, is it? Or is it just kind of a ballpark?
To you, Mr. Mayor, we have to, per the town procurement policy, we would go to tender on these things or RFP to make sure that we get the best possible price that meets the needs we're looking to serve.
Councilor Davies?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you. And I just want to say I really hope this does go through. I think it's be fabulous for the town, really important for our young people and for the community spirit. The question I have is that, and our goal has always been to get that ice filled up and get that ice time filled up. How much closer are we getting to a good position with good utilization of the ice? Is that too tricky a questions?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the reason why I'm smiling is because I actually just did this calculation last week. With the introduction of the junior C team, we are at 81% of prime, and actually, that's actually a little bit misleading because prime, as I calculated for my purposes, went from 4 p.m. till midnight. Our actual prime in terms of our rate card goes from 6 p.m. to midnight. But if I take 4 p.m. to midnight as the new prime model, that we'll call it the desirable time, we're 81% full. The times that are left range from 9:30 and 10 o'clock to midnight, and there is one period on Saturday, pending the outcome of scheduling for the junior C organization, from 8 p.m. to midnight. And other than that, we're full. So if we think of 9:30 p.m. to midnight as desirable time, then yeah, we're 81%. If we think not, we're 100% full.
Congratulations.
Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That's heartening news, Dean, and I think that bodes well for this town and moving forward and whatnot. And if it's appropriate, I'd like to move the recommendation at this point, or the report, to receive it and also concur with the recommendation outlined.
There's support for that, Councillor Davey. Further discussion, Councillor Puget.
Thank you, Mayor Hirst. Through you to Dean. Dean, just all my questions have been answered except for two. And going back to the dressing room issue, do we need one large dressing room or two large dressing rooms?
Yeah, I'll ask you to answer it. Coming from where we're at, okay, and competing with other junior C teams in the area, one dressing room is not feasible. You need a trainer's area for kids' well-being. There's always a major injury that can happen. So we strategically looked at the arena, the best way we could get into the arena at the cheapest price. Okay, we also even talked about the storage area in the corner where the gondola was going to be, to turn that into an office if there was no other way of putting an office in the dressing rooms. We came up with, let's put a dressing room or a office at the front half of the dressing room, so we're just putting up a wall. So anything we've tried to do to get into this arena for the 2013 season, we've done it with thinking about the town of Amherstburg and the cost. The dressing room, we have to have that. It's just, it's part of it.
As a follow-up, so that is that we have to knock out two walls?
No, we're just taking out one wall in between the two dressing rooms just to allow a 6-foot walkway from one side to the other. You'll have just an opening. So they'll just put in I-beam like that, put an opening in there so we can at least get to the other side. So the rear half will allow the players to still shower, plus the training room. The front half will be taken up by the coach and the coaching staff, so they have somewhere to have meetings with their players.
But for the visiting team?
It's just one dressing room for the visiting
team. The team only gets one room.
They're not being accommodated. That's just enough just for them.
If I could, through you, Mr. Mayor, I'm going to pass around just I made a diagram, and I had it in my file, and I wasn't, but you'd be able to see schematically where the dressing rooms sit and which ones are being used and occupied under this plan.
And because of time, we did use DeAngelis because they had all the blueprints and they knew the capacity of the building. So that's where that quote came from.
You may continue.
The women's hockey plays on Sunday night, will they have to be moved?
At this point, women's hockey has not been factored into the schedule. It's a program that we run. We needed to deal with accommodating our incumbent users. If at all possible, the women's league will return next year, but I can't guarantee it at this point. The ice hasn't been set.
On the motion, all in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried unanimously. Thank you, gentlemen. Next item.
Brings us to presentations. Item 6.1, Tony Berardi, Stantec Consulting, new water tower final construction, old water tower demolition completion. If you could refer to consent item 17A.
If you would, for council, I believe you want to do all of those at once, Luke?
That's correct.
Okay.
Good idea.
Yeah.
So that would include 17A, 12.2, 12.1, together with the presentation.
I'll move that.
Moved by Councillor Sutton, supported by Councillor Davies. Any discussion? All in favor? Opposed? It's carried.
I'm ready to go. Good evening, Mayor and members of council. I'm here tonight to, at the request of administration, give you a little bit presentation on the construction of the new water tower and the demolition of the old water tower. Put together a little video summarizing the project with a little bit of slides and video included. There's no sound except for the for some of the video parts of it. I'll talk through it, and I have my laser pointer in case I need to see a little red dot, and that's me. You can start the video. The video will go through the construction of the new water tower and then go into the demolition of the old water tower. So here we see the excavation for the foundation of the new water tower. Here is a slide showing a large boulder that we found during excavation. We thought it was bedrock, but after excavating around it, we found a boulder. Here you see the boulder being chopped up and taken out. The tower is founded on bedrock. The bedrock's very shallow in this part of the county. It's only 22 feet deep. And it saved us over $500,000 in putting the pile foundation. Here you see the forming and reinforcing of the foundation slab. Here you see the first pour of the foundation slab. Here you see the forming of the first section of the pedestal wall. And you see the tower crane set up in the middle. Here's the next section going up, and the tower was built by section, piece by piece, up to the top.
Did you ever get any questions on that tower leaning?
The tower is straight. It is plumb. There it is, the final pour at the very top. That's the dish underneath the bowl. Here's the jig set up to weld the steel tank walls, and as you can see, they weld the walls at the bottom. Here's a further off into the welding of the bowl. You see the vertical sections from the cone. In here you see the final part where they put the chamfered at the top. And here was the part where they started painting the tank. Now the tank uses state-of-the-art ultra-modern coatings for extended service life and performance. Here's a look at the tank prior to being lifted to the top with the painting completed, except for, and here's the lettering that was put on just prior to hoisting. Here we take a look at the tank just prior to being hoisted. It's going all the way up. It uses a system of cables up at the very top. You can see the pulleys up there and the cables down the side. And here's going up slowly. Almost there. And here we are at the very top, completed. Once they do that, they weld the bottom of the tank to the steel plates. And here we have the site work in progress. So the asphalt, the access road, sidewalks, and the landscape. Here's a look at the access tube through the tank, looking up at the roof hatch. Here's looking down the middle of the tank, down the access. So we're sitting on the roof right now, looking down. Here's a shot off the roof, looking north, down Thomas Road. And here's a shot looking west at the old water tower. You can see it right next to the mast. Mm-hmm. That mast, those are lightning rods to protect the tank. And here's a little video walking inside the valve room right on the main floor. You can see all the main piping, the valving, the whole valve train. What you don't see, if you go in there right now, you'll see all the piping has been insulated in color. So those two pipes are the inlet and the outlet. Well, those vertical pipes. And here is another shot looking at the access doors. Here's a look at the control system. This tower uses modern process controls and SCADA communication system that will enable operations staff and treatment plant to continuously monitor the status while enhancing the overall operation and efficiency of the whole Emmitsburg water supply system. Here's a shot of the heat trace controllers to guard against pipe freezing for both the inlet and the outlet risers that go up to the bottom of the bowl. And here's the tower as it looks today. A little bit of green there from the landscaping that we did back in late winter. Here's another closer shot. You'll see the overflow pipe off on your right. And that's in case the power overflows, so we'll dump there. Here, constructed by the specialty contractor Landmark Structures Corporation, 500,000 gallon capacity, stands 145 feet tall. And the construction cost was approximately $2.79 million. Now we're going to go to the old water tower.
Just before you go to that, maybe, I don't know, would you know what's the life expectancy of that
50
tower?
Years. You should be able to get 50 years out
50
of that tower,
years?
At least. Maybe you might have to recode it in 30 years.
What about the tower itself, that tank?
Yeah,
the
that
paint
tank
job.
Should be good for, you're going to need a paint job. In 25 years. And you know what? You probably get, we'll all be dead by the time the tower will be replaced. The thing
That's
is that nowadays, the use of these coatings, the coatings are so advanced that compared to the old days, we can get double, triple, quadruple the life of the old,
good.
The old tanks.
I think that's important to know. The pressure in our mains are good, little much better than the old.
Yes.
And the elevation there is much more advantageous to it, isn't it?
It's just a little bit higher, Mr. Mayor, but it seems to be operating beautifully now.
Sure. Councillor Pouget, followed by Councillor Davies.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst. Through you to Lou. Lou, is this on budget and on time, the entire operation of the new tower?
Mr. Mayor, the project did come in on budget, and the time frame was as expected.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Davies?
And I'm not sure whether this is a Lou question or the contractor's question, but in time of, if there were a disaster, i.e. a contamination of our drinking water, like the river or whatever, how long would the water with conservation, how long would that water protect us until we had to have clean water source?
Well, if the water's contaminated, tower couldn't be used because the water would be contaminated in the tower as well.
So the water is coming in constantly?
Yes, that tower floats on the system, meaning that there's only one pipe to the tank, and that pipe is integral with the distribution piping that's
sure.
in the ground.
Supplementary. I guess what I was thinking of it is in time of a disaster and you shut that water, you shut any new water off so that it couldn't contaminate that water, would that tank shut off still be good to provide water until?
Sure.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, there's 500,000 gallons of water in there. Not all of it is for regular use. A lot of it, some of it is for fire protection. 25% of that tank is for fire protection. But doesn't mean that you can't use it. So if you were to lose your water treatment plant, for example, that tower will be there. Consumption in Emmitsburg is, Lou, what's your max daily here?
It's about 12,000 cubic meters per day.
Depending on the time of year, too.
Yes.
Yeah, the summertime is the worst case.
Yeah, of course. But, I mean, let's hope we never get to that, because if something happened where our water was contaminated and somebody said, but we've got it in the tower, you can, you know,
you
where
also
I'm going to get
I'm
water.
I'm talking a Walkerton issue.
Well,
I'm talking a minor.
I ain't going to be like that. Come on.
Yeah, and you also have storage at the water treatment plant.
Emergency strategy. Mm-hmm.
Councilor
Pima. That number, it's just a math number, but I would think it to be a day or less.
Sure.
Because you can't size these towers too large. Number one, cost. Number two, if you size them too large, the turnover inside is so slow, so and you get stagnation issues.
Exactly.
So you don't want to go there. So too big is not necessarily.
No, I was just asking for
exactly.
Emergency.
Councilor Pima.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I guess the comment that you made kind of interests me. You said you saved $500,000 with the bedrock. Now, was any of that realized by the town of Amherstburg too?
No, basically your bid, had you been in, say, in Lakeshore situation, you would have been putting piles down 110 feet, somewhat like 85 piles.
So now that was planned?
No, we never planned the bedrock. That having the bedrock shallow was to your advantage.
No, it was to our advantage.
It was to your advantage and saved you considerable cost had you not had shallow bedrock.
But
a lot of people don't know we have shallow bedrock in this part
of
the
town. Well, what do you think we got?
That's the purpose. Anyone else? Councilor Pucci.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Now, we're not done the presentation.
No. She got a question relative to this.
Sure.
This part of it. For the inner sanctum where you keep your all your machinery, is that climate controlled or do you have any
down at the bottom floor that you saw going in? That's called the valve room. It is not climate controlled. It has ventilation and it has heat, but no air conditioning.
And the second part of that is, and maybe you can't answer it, but through you, Mr. Mayor, to Lou. When someone has to go in for repairs, do they have a backup that goes in with them, or do they wear a monitor?
Mr. Mayor, there's a policy that there has to be a double. There has to be a buddy that, so they go together, especially if they go up on top of the tower.
That falls within the act itself. You've got to do that. You may continue, Tony.
Sure. Okay, this is a shot of the old water tower with the naming there, looking at from the lighting place. Now, here we brought in a high-reach machine to start stripping the outer shell. Here's the high-reach machine punching a hole through the side of the tank to start the tear down. And here's the machine slowly eating away at the tank walls in a controlled fashion with unique high-reach equipment. You got to remember, this equipment is probably one of its kind in Canada and very few in North America. Makes these types of jobs well-suited for this type of equipment. And we were lucky enough to be able to have a contractor in the area to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. Here's a slow process of munching away at the slab. The slab in this particular structure. Remember, this tower was a concrete tower, one of the very few left in the province, constructed back in the day when the ministry thought that these would take control versus the welded steel towers. But that was not to be the case. And being a tower that's a post-stress, it was very critical that we find a contractor that would be able to do this. Here you see the demolition of the tower pedestal. And here's it munching away at the floor and the wall. Here we're going down the pedestal a little bit more. Here we are near the bottom. Now, what you can see on the right-hand side is a big screen, which is a hanging fence. Innovative. An ingenious method of preventing debris from hitting the nearby houses. Give credit to the contractor, Priestley, for coming up with that idea. Slow process, easy does it, I guess. No hurry here. A fabulous arm that twists around and the handle just munches away. The old-fashioned way of with the ball and chain is less controlled than this method here. And here we are at the bottom. I was able to put together a photo showing the entire base slab. just prior for it being demolished. And here they have the hammers jacking away. Here we have the concrete's done. We're putting compacting the fill that's there after the removal of the concrete. Here we are. We backfilled with stone, packed the stone. So hopefully there's no issues with building any structures in that area. And here the area is covered with topsoil. Here we are looking at the site as it sits today. Final landscaping is to appear in May. Here's another shot. Here's some stats demolished by the specialty contractor Priestley Demolition Inc. Demolition cost there was $200,000, and it created three building lots out of the unit. I would say that you got a fantastic price for demolishing that tower. The tower came down. It's a model. It did pretty well. No problem. A little bit of dust on the neighboring homes. No damage. Contractors still go back and clean up some of the houses. But my opinion, fantastic job. No claims. Great price, like I said. And of course, having Priestley working at the demolition of the works down the street, the Honeywell there, I think. Play to your advantage.
Absolutely.
Same thing with water tower. It went fantastic. Contractor worked well. We still have a little bit of deficiencies here and there, but nevertheless, the tank's working fabulous. And I don't think we even noticed that the tower's on site. So I think it was a great project, and everything went well.
Deputy Mayor Soto.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That just brings up a question with the final. I don't know, perhaps Lou would be the one to ask this question of the ground as it's being made on the old water tower now, and if we're going to deal with it later as far as the surplus lands there, will that be restricted to like residential because of the softness of the ground, or is it solid to build a skyscraper, for lack of a better name?
Mr. Mayor and Council, there was tests performed to the backfill, and that is solid. That's been compacted to at least 95% proctor.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
Motion to receive, Councillor Sutton.
Move to receive the presentation as well as consent report, item 17A.
Supported by Councillor Pilon. Any further discussion? Councillor DePasquale.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I just like to make a comment about the professionalism. In building the new tower and taking down the old one, it just amazes me. I go by there several times, just watching them demolish it and building the other one. And we got a good job, I think, a great job. By our people that were hired to do it.
On the motion, all in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried. Next item.
The new motions are 12-1 and 12-2.
12-1 and 12-2. That's Council's pleasure. Councilor Sutton, once again.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move receipt of 12-1 along with the recommendation as listed.
There's support for that motion. Councilor Davies. Further discussions? All in favor? Motion again is carried unanimously. 12-2. Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Rao. Move the report be received and concur with the recommendation.
Councilor Pilon supports that motion. Further discussions? If not, all in favor? Again, it's carried unanimously.
That brings us back up to reports under item 7, Recreation, Culture, Parks, Municipal Alcohol Management Policy.
What's Council's pleasure relative to that report? Councilor Sutton.
Move the report be received and that the policy be approved as presented.
There's support for that motion. Councilor Davies supports that motion. Any discussion relative to that? Councilor Puget.
Thank you, Mayor Harris. I'm not sure if I should address it to Paula or to Nicole. It's regarding, because Rick's not here, right? It's regarding the controls. When the people enter the facility, will you be able to check their purses or baggies that they're carrying to see if they're bringing in any liquor? Or do you know that?
Through you, Mr. Mayor. For that kind of control, that would be done by the security that's there. The event organizer is going to contract that security and make that a request of them, depending on what type of event.
I think, Dean, would you respond, please?
Sure, and I'll just add one more point as well. That typically, that's a voluntary act, just so we're clear on what that means. You usually ask somebody if they'll open their purse. It's voluntary. We can choose to prohibit their entrance based on them not opening it, but we would not be into the search and seizure business or anything like that. Just so we're clear.
And just one further question, this is I have been asked about two or three times, and I think it should be known to the public. Given the breakdown, they're not allowed to drink in the stands at all, correct? Like for minor hockey or something like that, they're not allowed to go into the stands and drink.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. Actually, the liquor license, the Liquor Act, had changed in the past couple of years to actually allow for drinking in the tiered seats at a hockey game, for example. In the past, you had to apply for what's called a tiered seating license separately, and you were restricted for the number of occasions that you could do it, and et cetera, et cetera. That's no longer the case. The licenses, the Act has changed to allow for it, the same as if you were licensing a room.
But it's my understanding that this is going to be for special events. So really, for the most part, we wouldn't have, like for an ordinary game like your son and my grandson would be at, we wouldn't be having drinking in the stands normally, correct?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, we would always place alcohol appropriately. There won't be any drinking at PB minor games.
That's what I'm asking.
But if I may add, there's one of the reasons why we were looking at the liquor license application for the UCC complex would be for situations like the Junior C games, right, where the age is more appropriate. Correct. We won't be asking or allowing people to drink at tight games, although there are centers that do. That's not our ambition. Our ambition is to provide entertainment where it's appropriate, which would be, for example, on a Junior C game. Right.
Okay. Councilor DePasquale.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you to Nicole, reference to 10.4 in your policy, Nicole. It says $2 million per occurrence. Like, can you explain that? Like, I mean, do they just get $2 million worth of insurance, or do they, like, one occurrence could be $2 million? You could have four occurrences.
Could you explain this to them, please?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I'm actually going to defer to our risk manager, Paula.
Okay.
Through you, Mr. Mayor. The $2 million of insurance coverage is per occurrence, meaning that any time, like, the insurance that they will carry will cover them per occurrence. So if there happen to be two incidents, the $2 million would cover each incident.
Okay. Good.
Okay. On the motion, have we got a motion? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you to Dean. With the perhaps sale of alcohol that'll be on in the tiered sections and whatnot, who would be selling that? Would the town be selling the alcohol? If so, we'd get a lot more money, wouldn't we?
To you, Mr. Mayor, yes. We're looking at the license as of last meeting when Rick brought forward the motion to approve us going after a liquor license for the complex. We would be looking at it as a town-run entity and sort of an extension of our concession.
Perfect, thank you.
But not in the concession.
No.
I don't want to be confused.
Councilor Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you. The facility is not suitable for occasional, special occasion permit events. And I don't know whether it might go under something different, but certainly the King's Navy Yard Park, for instance, in the celebrations of the War of 1812, had beer and wine during those celebrations. Was that not in the King's Navy Yard Park, or was that in that kind of, was that not defined as the King's Navy Yard Park? It's kind of where the Hosta Garden is.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, the 1812 event was done. There was an SOP taken out for that event in the King's Navy Yard and passed by Council for that occasion. So if there was a request, it would come before Council for King's Navy Yard.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. On the motion, all in favor? Opposed? Opposed, motion again is carried unanimously. Next item.
Item 7.2, Canada Day 5K Run.
Councilor Pito.
Motion to receive and to also concur with the request.
Supported by Councilor Davies. Further discussion, Councilor Davies.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. I participated along with a number of other councilors and other many, many volunteers to for that run. One of the things that was discussed was that because we had the marathon the following day, the half and the full, and the 10K, I'm just wondering if there's been any consideration for the 5 and the 10 to be that same date versus not mixed with the marathon. Thank you.
The reason, but go ahead,
Councilor Sutton. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. This is a different event from the Run for Heroes Marathon. This is a resurrection of a 5-day or 5K to be held on Canada Day specific. So there is no other run involved. There will be other festivities, obviously, hosted by the town in Toddy Jones Park, Fort Malden, etc. But in terms of the Run for Heroes, that's a separate event. So maybe we can get Mr. Yuzinski back in front of council to ask your question.
Okay. On the motion, all in favor? Opposed, motion is carried unanimously.
Item 7.3, agreement with Hardy Marine Contracting Limited.
Council's pleasure. Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll move the report regarding the agreement with Hardy Marine be received and concur with the recommendation.
Been moved. Is there a supporter? Councillor Couget. There's no discussion. Councillor Couget.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst. And this is for you, to Dean. I tried to reach Ann today, and I talked to Dean about this, but and I know maybe Dean could speak on it. It's when the ship or the spud dock is tied to the bollards, which are located across the interlocking brick walkway. And I asked if the ropes will impede people that are trying to get by, like in a wheelchair or whatever. Like, will they have to go all the way
would
back
you
around?
Yeah, there's going to be a barricade there, but you can explain it, Dean.
Yeah, to you, Mr. Mayor. At this point, and you did ask me the question earlier, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back and find out some more details. We're working with a contractor that we have a lot of faith in. I believe that if there are ropes extended over the pathway, that we'll make sure they don't damage anything. And we'll also make sure that if they are there, that we have passovers that allow a wheelchair to pass. We're going to have a significant, like we're looking at 5 figures of people coming through. It would be against our better interests and our best judgment to not make sure that they had the ability, regardless of their personal condition, to get to the tall ship. So we'll make sure we look after it.
And
but I'll come back.
And get that information back as quickly as possible, because that will discuss with, of course, Hate relative to that understanding, this is going to be for a determined period of time.
Correct.
And the second part of the question is regarding whether or not it will be tied to the bollards or to the Navy Yard rail. That was the other part of the question. Okay, and the construction fencing, I know it says we're going to have construction fencing, but will that be around the spud barge? Like, I'm not sure where the construction fencing is going to go.
Why don't we do this? I don't like to guess what it's going to be, and apparently Ann's not here, but those questions will be recorded, and a response will be coming back to council as quickly as possible.
I believe we can satisfy those questions. I don't think that they, in my opinion, should be an imposition to the moving forward on this motion. But I think you should hopefully rest assured that we'll look after things and make sure that people are safe, mm-hmm. That the aesthetics are maintained, and that access is maintained.
But I think you got to understand the picture, and I've seen the picture, and I've seen them talk about it, and there's guardrails that will allow them to come through with having no problem of going into the water or injuring themselves. This has been a well thought out idea, and of course, Mr. Hardy has been in this business for a long period of time, and all of those concerns have been addressed. Councillor Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you, just another quick question. Is this just for the tall ships, or are we going to be taking advantage of this also for the cruise ships? Because I know the cruise ship was concerned about shallow waters coming in.
Through you, Mr. Mayor, we are putting it in place in time for the Macassa Bay season. It's technically in place for tall ships, and it's actually being paid for as a result of the Tall Ships Festival. But we're definitely going to take advantage of it to allow Macassa Bay to come in for this 1 year. There is a shallow water concern when they get closer. This allows us to move them out closer to the shipping channel, which allows them deep water. They'll need to be confident and consistent in coming to entry.
They will be accommodated at the same berthing rate there. Councilor Pino.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think one thing we need to understand is regardless of those barges being there, those tall ships would tie to those bollards anyway. So we had to deal with it, whether it's a barge or the tall ship. This isn't creating a new problem.
No, what this is doing is providing us that opportunity this year without dredging. That's
right.
That's the reason for the implementation of the barge. On the motion, all in favor? Opposed? The motion is carried unanimously.
That brings us to 12.3, request for replacement of an existing culvert on the 8th Concession Road, Municipal Drain North.
Councilor DePasquale.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move the report from Blues Arlinga dated February 26 regarding the request for replacement of an existing culvert on the 8th Concession Road, Municipal Drain North, from Patrick and Donald Coyle be received, and further that council rescind the motion to appoint Crozier Baird Engineers dated October 15, 2012 for the request from Patrick and Donald Coyle for the replacement of an existing culvert over the 8th Concession Road, Municipal Drain North, after section 78 of the Drainage Act.
If that's 12.2? 12.3. What was
12.3.
12.3. Yeah, what we'll have to do is, because of what had transpired, there has been a change with the request. But to rescind, that's a reconsider. And there's a procedure that should be in place relative to that. Am I not correct in that?
That's correct, Mr. Mayor. So the owners of the bridge have reconsidered the need for the bridge, and they've asked that the previous motion that council passed to hire an engineer be rescinded, and they do not want to have the bridge now.
So
we need to move to reconsider that original motion.
And that takes a two-thirds majority, so just keep that in mind. Councilor DePasquale.
I make a motion that we reconsider this item, 12.3.
Been moved. For the supporter, Councilor Davies supports it. All in favor? I'm sorry, did you want
to? Well, I did have a quick question.
Go ahead.
Rescinding the contract for the Crozier Baird.
At the request of those individuals.
Yes. Will there be any retribution on that? Okay. Well, I didn't know if contract somebody to do something,
no,
and then you say
no,
we're not going to
no,
do
no,
it anymore.
No, no. They would have told you. Lou would have said that. It's not.
Just asking the question.
Yeah. On the motion, all in favor. That's all I'm asking. Opposed is carried unanimously. Now your motion is there and it's been supported. On the motion to rescind, all in favor. Opposed, motion is carried unanimously.
Can the motion just receive the record as well?
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
and a motion to receive. I think you included it in the. Did you include to receive the report in the first motion to rescind?
I don't remember, but
okay.
I will. I make a motion to.
Is that okay?
I think
would it be okay to include
receive
it
the report.
With
sure.
The mover?
Yes.
Yep,
okay,
no problem.
It's okay.
Okay. Item 12.4, Leo Godwin Pump, request for improvements to the pump station from Town of Amherstburg.
Councilor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move receipt of that report that council accept the request for improvements to the Leo Bogla pump as per section 78 of the Drainage Act, that council appoint a drainage engineer pursuant to the provisions of the Drainage Act for the repair improvement of the Leo Bogla pump, and further that the firm of Dilling Consulting be appointed for that purpose.
Supported by Deputy Mayor Sutherland. Any discussion? Councilor Davis.
Yeah, I just need some clarification on this. Now that we have the enhanced system, will that cost be covered by the town in general, or will it be specific to the people in the area?
Mr. Mayor, this pump is part of the Leo Bogwin pumping scheme, and it is a municipal drain. Any repairs or updating to the pump would be paid for by all of the people upstream that drain into the system.
And any other drain would be. Okay, on the motion, all in favor? Opposed, the motion is carried again unanimously.
Item 12.5, Fourth Concession Road Drain, request for new access culvert.
Councilor Pito.
Motion to receive the report and concur with the request.
Get a supporter for that. Deputy Mayor Sutherland, discussions? If not, all in favor? Opposed, motion is carried unanimously.
Item 12.6, King Street Sanitary Sewer Renewal, Phase 2 from Gore Street to Richmond Street, tender results.
Councilor Sutton.
Move receipt of the report and further that council accept the consulting engineer's recommendation to award the contract to the lowest bidder, being DeMore Construction, for the amount of $262,392 plus HST.
Supported by Councilor DePasquale. Discussions? All in favor? Again, motion is carried unanimously.
Reports under legislative services, 16.1, insurance risk management plan.
On the report, it's Council's pleasure relative thereto. Councilor Sutton.
Move receipt that Council direct administration to move forward with the insurance risk management plan as presented, and further that bylaw 2013-39 be read three times, finally passed, and the mayor and clerk be authorized to sign same thereto.
There's supporter for that motion. Councilor Puget supports that motion. Further discussion, Councilor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you, just looking at the plans in place, and I'm glad to see we're moving forward on this and saving some money in terms of our insurance and hopefully continuing those savings in the future. But I'm just wondering, Paula, about the working relationship that you foresee between the adjuster once that RFP is settled and yourself, the treasurer, and our director of legislative services, in terms of how that will all unfold in terms of whether a claim is denied or upheld.
Certainly, through you, Mr. Mayor. What will happen is we are currently working with Claims Pro. I will be looking to RFP for a new adjuster by the end of the probably by September. But currently with Claims Pro, what we're doing is he looks at the claims process. He will investigate the claim. He will provide me with a report and recommendation to either settle or deny the claim. And with that process, I will bring the information that I've received from the adjuster to Brenda and Paul, dependent on the level of the claim. And we will sit and discuss whether we decide to settle on the claim. It'll be based on the adjuster's recommendation, but he may at some point or another suggest denial of the claim, and we may, based on my knowledge of insurance and experience, decide to pay out, and it will either work that way or it will deny the claim.
Just as a follow-up to that, obviously I know it says in the report that, you know, council will be made aware periodically of those settlements. In terms of the information that can be shared, I know there was always some question around whether you can just settle an amount, a claim number, or whether you can actually, you know, name the actual person or persons, organization, you know what I mean, who made the claim in the first place. I'm just curious as to how that will all work out as well, or if we even know at this stage.
I will let Brenda into that.
The freedom of information will and personal information will still be taken into consideration. So as council will recall, previously when we brought forward the sheet indicating the different claim amounts, we can continue to do that with those claims that are settled internally or and the ones that are also from Cowan's.
Okay. Thank you.
Councilor Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you, just a few questions. There was one statement evaluating if there are any areas to transfer risk to a third party. Could you elaborate on that, what that means?
Certainly. That would be, for example, in regards to events and whatnot. If we have an organizer putting on something with the town or within the town, we would ask that the organizer make sure that all of the proper insurance is in place regarding protecting us. We would ask to be as an additional insured to the policy so that anything that happens, the organizer would be then sued and it would cover the town.
thank you very much. So that means that they would be purchasing their own insurance for those events in case, so it would take the pressure off of ourselves. I really am impressed with the strategies that you have here, and I was feeling that this is an excellent opportunity for health and safety education, which of course we always supply through the program anyway. But I was wondering about when you look at this. It's right now sounding very internal, in-house. But, I think it's an excellent opportunity for the community to participate in making it a safe community in this level. And I didn't know whether or not there could be such a thing as like a hotline. You know, when somebody sees a curb that's got a pothole or a cement sidewalk up level, whether there was a way that they could easily just call and get the public works staff out to fix it ASAP versus somebody's fallen and we find it later. I think it's a preventive thing, and I'm just wondering if that can be taken into consideration.
Certainly through you, Mr. Mayor. We would always ask that any residents that come across any issues like that would call in and let us know. And I believe as it works right now with Public Works, I think that the Lou gets those phone calls and takes care of them.
We've been doing that for some time.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is simply this. Listen, the events, and we encourage events, are very important for our community. But make no mistake about it, they have their insurance. The municipality is always going to be that third party there. And the way the arbitrators look at this, when they make their awards, they look at who's got the most money, and you know who it is? It's the municipality. That's our problem. The problem we have is that has to be changed. I mean, you stop and think about it from just a few years ago to what we're paying. Now we're paying $50,000 deductible. That's a tremendous amount of money, and it's all because of the cases that we are being dealt with. And somebody's got to be there that says, enough of this. Enough of this. And that's the key. Councillor Davies.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mr. Mayor, about that part, but I was thinking more prevention so that it doesn't happen in the first place, and that number could be easily, like people could easily find it versus folks who are well-versed in knowing to call Lou. And then my final question is that this seems like this would be a place where an in-house legal expert to address small claims would come in handy.
I don't know where you get that from. I really don't. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Excuse me, sorry, through you, Mr. Mayor. Legal advice is completely different than insurance advice. That would come in regards to litigation matters. Insurance is through the insurance provider, as well as obviously now through us, through in-house.
Councilor DiPasquale.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Through you to Paula, going through this, it kind of made me feel more secure as far as better risk management, having one person receiving all this information and this type of stuff. Can you tell us, have you done anything, or do you plan on, is it a little early to see what you're going to do with the risk management?
Through you, Mr. Mayor, I am working continuously on the risk management, as well as working with all of the directors and all of the managers. All administration is doing a great job with risk management already. We just needed to be at the forefront of everybody's mind, and with me being concentrating on that, we're going to get where we need to be.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Paul.
On the motion, all in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried unanimously.
Consent reports brings us to item 17B, C and D. The council already considered item A.
Councilor Pilon.
I'd like to I'll move items 17, B, C, and D
They're
to
supportive.
Be received.
Councilor Pouget, support? Discussions? Councilor Pilon.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to, it was quite ironic this weekend. I had quite a discussion with one of the local farmers on municipal drains. And then when I seen this report in here, the concern from the farmer was, well, we have two engineers. Why aren't they doing these drains? Why aren't they doing the report instead of spending $3,000 or $4,000 for every drain, sometimes more? So So, you know, I mean, I understand their frustration. It's a lot of money. In fact, that's likely why the earlier one was canceled, partly due to that end cost. But when you look at the report and the number of drains that our drainage people are handling, like, my God, there was 30-some drains there. And for one person, and we know Lou don't have time to follow up on them. Like, we don't have, and I did explain to them, we don't have the people involved to work with Eric and to do all these. So anyway, I just wanted to, it was a good report. I was glad to see it. And I asked Eric for a copy of it so I could show my fellow farmer that why. You know what I mean? And I like to show them. I want to prove them why we can't do it. Because there is a lot of follow-up on them.
How long have you been in farming, Councilor Pelham?
Have I?
No, how long have...
Oh, he's been in for 25 years.
And who's been paying for the drainage all of these years?
Well, it just affected him. This one just affected him
shortly.
Councilor
Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, through you. This is just a clarification question. They pitch and drain. Where is it located? Is that McGregor off of Wellington and Blue?
Mr. Mayor, there's a map that's attached with that shows each one of these projects.
I couldn't see pitch and drain. I made it as large as I could. Is that off of McGregor? Do you know?
Mr. Mayor, I would be guessing where the pigeon drain is because we've never really had any issues with it.
Okay, because I did get a concern about a drain off of Wellington and Blue, and I wanted to know whether or not it was our drain or the person's drain, so I could get back to them.
But that's up in that would be up in the Sucker Creek.
Yes.
Creek area, that's Blue and McGregor there.
That's the one. I got a call about that, so I'll talk to you about it later. Sure. And just a comment on Councillor Pelon's comment and his farmer. You know, it would be an interesting business case, I tread lightly here, or not, a business case to see whether or not, I know we have extremely skilled public works workers, whether or not it could be a business case to see whether or not it would be more cost effective to have trained drainage people, if that work was there, than always hiring consultants. For certain maintenance type drains.
That's a drainage expert, Lou. I let you respond to that. I think it's very important.
Mr. Mayor, I'll answer that by giving you an example. There's one municipality within Ontario, which is our next door neighbor, that actually has their own equipment, and they partake in drainage throughout the municipality, and which is great. But one of the problems that they find is that they don't have advantage to the government grants. So everybody is paying for everybody else's drainage. It works there, but it could work better.
I think you got the grants there, but you also got liability. Let's not forget that. And that's a very important factor. On discussion on this issue, anyone else? Hearing none, all in favor? Opposed, motion is carried.
Consent correspondence, there are 1-5 items before council.
Councilor Sutton.
Thank you. Move receipt of the consent correspondence as listed in items A through E.
Supported by Deputy Mayor Sutherland. Any discussion? Yes.
Just on item D, I'd just like to mention, as a member of the Essex County Library, the tour for southern part of the county will be on the 27th of April, as listed on the thing. And I just remind all of council that those that would like to come and meet with the members of the library board will be arriving at the Amherstburg branch somewhere between 10:15 and 10:30 on Saturday the 27th. And look for it. I know in other times we've had councillors come out, so it'd be nice to see some councillors come and just say hello. Thank you.
On the motion. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just the question on the cost of the, I was reading the prices of the salt and calcium and things like that. Do we have an idea of the, and I know it's a longer winter and we're holding our breath on whether or not we get through it or not. Do we have a costing on the cost of doing the winter roads, the 2012-13 versus the 2011-12? How did we fare? Did we stay within budget?
Mr. Mayor, we don't have the final numbers, but we will have a report for the very next council meeting.
Thank you.
Okay. On the motion.
Provided it doesn't snow.
All in favor? Motion is carried.
More than 3 centimeters.
Consent other minutes. There are 3 sets of minutes before council.
It's council's pleasure relative to those 3 sets of minutes under the consent of other minutes. Councilor Puget.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst. That the following minutes be received, A, B, C, and C.
There's support for that motion. Deputy Mayor Sutherland. All in favor? Opposed? Motion again is carried unanimously.
Correspondence 20.1, Essex County Steam and Gas Engine Museum, Inc.
Councilor Pihl.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I wondered if, before I make a motion, just a question through you to Brenda. I see the recommendation is 100. Is this what we've done every time, every year? I thought we did half.
Follow the rate there, she will tell you.
I thought we did a half a page before.
Sorry, through you, Mr. Mayor, it is as per, it's to be consistent with 2012.
That's what it was, okay. Then I'll make a motion to receive the report and concur with the request of $100 for a quarter page.
Councilor Davies supports that motion. Further discussion? All in favor? Motion is carried.
Unfinished business items?
Councilor Pihl, followed by Councilor Sutton.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. And Lou, through you, one of the things, again, is gravel roads. When are we going to get on the gravel roads and start grading them again? Because I did have a couple people call me.
Mr. Mayor, just a little bit too early, and our road superintendent is looking at it quite actively every day.
Still too early?
Yeah. Okay. Councilor Sutton.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just if we could, it was something we talked about in budget, but a report coming back from Public Works regarding the consulting fees and how we're going to deal with that issue moving forward.
And Mr. Mayor,
Everybody's doing the same thing.
Someone with maximum coefficient.
Whoever is that buying tonight?
Mr. Mayor, we're still working on that report.
Yeah,
it'll be.
Just don't want to lose sight of it, that's all.
Anyone else? Councilor Puget.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst. And I'm not sure if this should fall under unfinished business or what, but I know that there has been a number of concerns regarding the 2-hour parking on Dalhousie Street and that it's not being enforced. And I just wondered if administration could bring back a report at our next meeting on whose job it is to enforce and if we could get it done.
Well, we've got our chief of police here.
I mean,
he can respond to that for you.
Mr. Mayor, if I cannot tell a lie, you'll have to ask the question. Okay. I was talking with Val.
All right. Go ahead. We're talking about the 2-hour parking limit on Dalhousie Street and what is being done relative to the violators. They're getting a lot of complaints, and it seems that no citations are being done now. Is that through your department? Is it through our bylaw officer?
We work with the bylaw department, okay. And we do what we can.
Okay.
Writing the 2-hour parking tickets is very time consuming, and there's no exact science to marking the vehicles. So what has to happen is the officer has to go down there. They have to make a notation in their notebook of where the valve stems are on the vehicle, and then go back after the 2 hours and check it again. There is software out there, and there are devices that you can purchase that will use a GPS and tag the vehicle exactly where it's at, but they are very expensive. So our current system, and we do work with our bylaw people, the current system is very, very time consuming.
I think one of the things that this isn't something new, it comes about every so often. The fact of the matter, if the truth be known, those people that are parking there for over the 2 hours are the people who work right in the area.
I know.
And that's a concern.
That's correct, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
It's been my experience that the complaints with the parking downtown served insurance as well, how come the others didn't get it?
Yeah.
This has been going on for quite some time.
Yes. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst, but and through you to our chief, but there still has to be enforcement. And last year, a number of complaints came in, and one of them said it wasn't his job, that he can only give 3 hours a month, and the others were saying it's low on their list. So there was no enforcement, and daily they were complaining because it was the same people that were parking 8 hours a day, and especially in the area where on Dalhousie Street, right across from the ice cream store. It was, and they'd bring me down there, and I'd observe the same 3 cars in that area and 2 more cars right on that, right across the street from it. So it was stopping people from going into, like a lot of elderly people go into the Country Bliss shop, and they would be driving around and around and couldn't get a parking spot, and then would just call them and say that they weren't going to go through to that building.
Councilor Pito.
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. Yeah, Councilor Bougie, you're right. It's not a new problem. It's been there. Our traffic committee's dealt with it. We have a bylaw officer and a police officer on our committee, and basically to bail and nail it down, it's going to take manpower. That's the whole thing. Next to buying a GPS with eyes on it. It's just a tough situation. I know up behind Maria's, the restaurant, well, the students park in the two-hour parking, and they're done in an hour and a half. They go out, go for lunch, and come back and park there again. I mean, they know. That's a problem. A lot of places, the people play the game. They know when they can gotta go. They take off. Even they move it. Because, the old days, they used to mark the tires. Well, God, if the chalk's over here now, guess what? That was all starting all over again. It's very time-consuming. And we've talked about it numerous times. In fact, we got a traffic committee on Thursday, and I will be bringing it up again just to talk about it and see what we come up with. Next to hiring a new bylaw officer, I don't know what we would actually do.
Councilor DePasquale.
Thanks, Mr. Hirsch. Through you to the chief. Chief, I've been retired for a few years, so I don't know if it's changed, but Police Act says the police are responsible for bylaw.
That's correct.
Does it still not say that?
That's correct.
And if we're having, like, these problems can be sporadic, like, it doesn't mean that every day they have to go up. But I bet you if they go up for a week in a row and check tires, people will stop. This has got to stop. Either that or we just don't have enforcement at all. Take all the signs down. There's no sense.
That would have been good if they were doing that back then, too. Councilor Sutton.
Back when you were there.
We did.
This problem's been there ever since I've been on council.
Yeah,
Councilor
DePasquale. Well,
there have been solutions floated by council on numerous occasions, and all of them boil down to dollars, whether we're talking about an increased police presence or we're talking about an increased presence of the bylaw enforcement officer. Both of those require more dollars. The idea has been floated in the past of having metered parking downtown. If you really want to fight on your hands, float that one by the general public, because I'll tell you, there will be a general outcry for that. And so it boils down to the same situation. Everybody wants a perfect world, but you have to enforce yourself. And when people aren't doing that, then they turn and they say, "Will you fix my problem?" And the problem is that there's not enough parking downtown. You know what? That's a good problem to have, because we want people coming to our downtown core, looking to shop, looking to visit, looking to do things. But if we're going to seriously take it, it's going to require money, either in advanced police presence and the time that costs, or in the presence of our bylaw enforcement officer, because time and time again they've told us it's cost prohibitive to do it. So you want metered parking?
You can
look at that.
Okay. Excuse me. If you want to speak, please come through the chair.
I'm not attacking you.
I'm sorry, sir.
Okay. I'm not attacking you.
You do that all the time. Nobody says anything.
I'm not attacking you, Councillor DePasquale.
I said, Councillor DePasquale, when you want to speak, please come through the chair.
I understand that, sir.
All right, then.
But you talk
conduct yourself that way.
Mr. Mayor, I'm not attacking any of my colleagues. I'm simply stating a point about what's been brought to council before. And those are options that have been before this council and previous councils, and nobody takes any action. So the bottom line is, we either invest and spend more money over this problem, or we ask people just to self-administer it themselves.
Councillor Davies.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Actually, isn't it funny that something is as straightforward as this is getting so much fun?
Exactly.
But the thing is that, and I agree that I don't think too many people in our town, which is well loved by tourists, wants to see the big city parking meters. Though I do suggest that we have a lot of parking. It's not right in your face. For the younger people, the more stores you walk by in a town, the greater chance you have more people exposed to other shopping than they would have thought they would have had. I do sympathize with the elderly who want to be able to make it directly to where they want to go. That's a bit of a Hollywood dream that you could park right where you want to be. But we're only really talking a few blocks. And I think that it would be a useful thing to go back to the traffic committee to look at some solutions. I think that certainly the Chamber of Commerce can play a very strong role in this, in advising their own members that they put themselves and their businesses at risk if they aren't encouraged to not park there themselves, and or encourage their customers, who they know well, to move on when they finish shopping in this particular area. Because I think we'll all benefit if we have an ebb and flow. You know, all kinds of sustainable economics have shown that traffic moving in, moving out, really creates a sense of busyness. And it is, in fact, in our best interest to have a very busy parking area, but there are lots of side parking lots that, in fact, indicate that for more ambulatory people, they can get to that main street quite easily.
Councillor Cruje.
Thank you, Mayor Hurst. This is a very simple question. I asked a very simple question. It's been ongoing, and there is something wrong if a councillor has to suggest that we have to hire more people in order to enforce a two-hour parking program when we have 30 police officers and we have a bylaw enforcement officer. Surely somebody could go and either put some notices on their windshield saying, hello, there's a two-hour parking thing and we are going to start enforcing this. That's all I'm asking, is periodically to go and enforce what should be enforced. That's it.
Councilor DePasquale.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just to reiterate, I'm not here trying to hurt our tourism or anything like that. All I want is some fair enforcement, and that can be done. It's been done before. We don't have to throw money at everything. Money is money. Sure, just keep throwing it out there. But solve the problem. It can be solved very easily. Thank you.
I think listening to what has been said, nothing new had been said that hadn't been said for many years. And so I think I would hope that we can take this under advisement, and certainly the department involved can do something to help. I don't know if you alleviate the problem, but every so often, every certain time of the year, this is raised, mm-hmm. and it needs to be looked at. It's very simple. Okay?
Bring us to new business.
Well, still under unfinished business. Before we go out of unfinished business, I've got your chief here, and I want to commend him and his staff for the fine work they did. I know council must have seen the magnitude of the graffiti that had been going around in our community, and they were successful in apprehending some of those individuals. I have talked to a couple owners today to have them get that graffiti off as quickly as possible, and of course, let you know exactly how much it costs to remove that graffiti. I think that type of information is very, very important. But we can't allow us to go back to where it used to be in the days when they would upturn our park benches in the Navy Yard Park and our garbage receptacles and deposit them into the Detroit River. We haven't had none of this for some time. Then all of a sudden there was a concerted effort by a group of people that went and wrote it in very ominous open areas where everybody could see it. And so they have did a great job in policing that, and let's hope that we can give
at least they are apprehended in a manner and given some type of community service or some costs that go along with it. Councilor Davis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I agree with you, and just like to know whether or not if they do have the community service, will it be part of it, the cleaning up the graffiti itself, which I think is, would be appropriate. I know that would be for a judge to decide.
Go ahead, Chief.
I can respond to that, Mr. Mayor. We, as a police service, do not select what the community service is for them. That is done through a program that is dealt with in Windsor.
Okay. New business? In camera, maybe.
Done. Report from in-camera session. Council met 5:30 on April 2nd, 2013 for a special in-camera meeting and discussed one item as provided for under Section 239(2)(b)(d) and F of the Municipal Act regarding a CIO update. There's nothing further to report on this matter at this time.
That brings us to, well, that brings us to bylaws. Oh, no, notice of the motion. Sorry, go ahead, Councilor Puget.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor Hurst. Under number 23, it says report from in-camera meeting held Monday, April 8th. I think it's supposed to be April 2nd.
Yeah.
That's the title. Thank you. It brings us to notices of motion 24.1, Councilor Davies, late industrial land development and infill opportunities for economic development as introduced at March 18th meeting.
Thank you, thank you very much. And through you, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to introduce a motion for administration to bring back a report on the availability of light industry, land development, and infill opportunities to the economic development within the town of Amherstburg, and I'll speak to it after I get a seconder.
Is there support? Councilor Davies supports that motion. Discussion. Councilor Puget supports the motion. Councilor Davies, discussion.
Thanks. Thanks very much, Mr. Mayor. And this was brought up to me actually by an industrial person who, when he approached me, you know, I know that, and I sat down with Rebecca and looked at the number of wonderful sites we already have available even before we do our assessment. But the thought is that I would like the administration to develop a strategy to aggressively promote land to industrialists and other light industry businesses who may, with the new U.S.-Canada bridge close to our community, who will seek the advantage of establishing their investments here in Amherstburg. A lot of it tends to go in a little bit, but because that bridge is going to be so much closer to Amherstburg, I really think we need a good marketing strategy and economic development plan for that. And I introduced this early in the progress of the bridge, as it can take up to 5 years for some business plans to become implementable by these folks. And further, I'd like to see visible signage inviting potential light industry purchasers or leasers to easily identify the lands available. And I think that also indicates that Amherstburg is here to invite industry and
but you're
employment
open for
and
business.
So forth. Yeah, we're open for business.
There you go. Okay. On the motion, all in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried unanimously.
24.2, Councillor Puget, signage on private property is introduced March 18th.
I'm requesting that administration introduce a bylaw that would control the use of signs being erected on property not owned by the person or company that is advertised on said signage. And I would ask if that report back from administration could be sent to the Parks Committee, who had concerns about it also.
Is that the motion you're putting? Is there a supporter for that motion? Been supported by Councillor Davies. Further discussions? All in favor? Opposed? Were you in favor of it, Councillor Pilon? I didn't see.
Yeah.
Okay. Carried unanimously.
24.3, Councillor Puget, environment concerns of storage of petroleum coke.
I'm introducing a notice motion to request that administration send letters to the appropriate levels of government to relay our environmental concerns of the open storage of petroleum coke on the banks of the Detroit River, and to also request support from our municipalities in Essex County, including IRCA and Essex County Council. I could have a second.
Supported by Councilor Sutton. Any discussion? Go ahead.
It's just that in the last few weeks, I'm very concerned regarding the fact that the petroleum coke is being stored on the banks of the Detroit River, and further that the Detroit Edison's Monroe Power Plant has a permit to burn 23,000 tons of pet coke. And I'm asking, you know, for these reasons, to send our request for the appropriate government agencies to become involved in investigating this matter. And because, you know, I'm very fearful that the environmental impact will have on our health of our residents, the impact on our drinking water and fish and wildlife industries. And scientists claim that burning a ton of pet coke yields an average of almost 54% more carbon dioxide than a ton of coal. And it's also full of sulfur and other minerals. And I just think it's better to have the government get on top of this before they actually do this and they bring in more pet coke.
I think it's been in the paper for a lengthy period of time, and you've read it almost every week in the paper, and it's over on the American side. And of course, people are concerned with the dust blown over. The big thing is no one seems to know at this particular point where the runoff is going. And so that is the key. And they're doing an investigation on Saturday. The paper was in there. They're doing an investigation relative to that now. So let's hope they will address it. On the motion, Councillor Davies.
Well, I was just going to say, I do know that Member of Parliament Brian Massey has been very aggressive on this file. But we still do not know enough. And I support this even to advising our AMO and FCM members to support this kind of thing, especially our border in this like Lambton and Sarnia.
I think your key is to be getting to your minister and letting the minister respond back to you and find out what they've done to date. That's the key here. That's what they're there for.
Yeah.
On the motion, all in favor?
May I ask?
Go ahead.
I'm prepared to include that in my motion if you want.
Sure, you can do it.
Minister of the Environment.
Yep. On the motion, all in favor? Opposed? Motion is carried unanimously.
Confirmatory bylaw 2013-40 for the meetings held April 2nd and April 8th.
It's Council's pleasure with the confirmatory bylaw. Deputy Mayor Sutherland.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'll move that Bylaw 40 for 2013 being a bylaw to confirm all resolutions in municipal council meetings held on April 2nd, April 8th, 2013 be taken as having been read three times, finally passed, and the mayor and the clerk be authorized to sign the same thereto.
There is support for that. Councilor Cruzet supports that. Motion. Further dialogue? All in favor? Again, motion is carried unanimously. Bring us to the next item on